Hi, my name's Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Tammy. Hey, y'all. My sobriety date is 12/30/2008, so by the grace of God, I haven't had to drink any alcohol or smoke any crack cocaine since 2008. You know? Thank you. Y'all know that applause was for God, right? Or my higher power. Yeah, because I had left up to me, I'll be out there downtown hustling crack. Still as old as I am. Right, so I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. And I'd like to say, though, I spoke here, about, I don't know, probably about 5 years ago, and there's a lot less people here then. And I was telling one of the girls, Becca, that when I was here, I'm a three-tread Austin Recovery, okay? So the first time I ever came to Austin Recovery, it was called REAP. I don't know if anybody's been around long enough to know about that, but it was called REAP. And the women were over there in the welcoming center. Yeah, and then the second time I came, it was in that main building y'all have right there, and that's really all we had, you know. And the girls were on the left end, and the guys were on the right end, and there was a lot of camaraderie going on, you know, and some their own personal fellowshipping. So that didn't work out too long. So anyway, so what it was like. So, you know, I don't have excuse why I'm a crackhead, recovering crackhead. My parents are still married to this day. They weren't abusive. You know, in my mind, but I'm very sensitive, they were a little bit emotional abusive, you know, but they did the best they could for, you know, my mother was 16 years old when she had my oldest sister, and 18 when she had me. So she did the best she could. You know, I've never doubted the love that they've had for me. You know, we weren't abused in any way physically or anything like that. And like I said, they're still married. They just celebrated 56 years of marriage. So, yeah, that's unique, and so I'm proud. Very unique. I've been married three times, so I'm just saying. No, I think twice. I forget. It's been so many. I don't know if live-ins count, right? So anyway, so, you know, I went to Leander, very small back then, very small school, and then I ended up going to Round Rock, and I graduated barely. I mean, I was already drinking and smoking weed, and I started that when I was about 13. I figured that was about the average age that people start doing those kind of things. I mean, that's what happened in my time. And but it was just alcohol and weed, you know, until I was 18 and I met my husband, my first husband. See, and I'm a very codependent person. I have all kinds of diseases, and they manifest in so many different ways. And my first husband, he's got a son that was born in January of 1985, and we have a daughter that was born in October 1985. See, the thing was, is I like to have anything that's going to make me feel different, and he was married. And he chose me over being with his wife, right? So I must have been a trophy. That's the way I looked at it in my delusional mind. I was a trophy, you know? Yeah, I had no conscious thought of what it was going to do to those kids or anything. You know, I was just such a user and a manipulator and only went after what I wanted, just what I wanted. You know, whoever was in my way, you know, I just plowed them down. And so I'm a little nervous tonight. I felt my voice shaking, which is unusual because I like to hear myself talk. But people ask me, are you nervous? And I'm like, no, not until I'm like right there in that seat and they're fixing to introduce me. And then I'm scared I'm going to cry by what they might say because I like to be told that I'm all that, you know, all that kind of shit. I love hearing that. Jane, I'm sorry. See, Jane taught me a long time ago I'm not supposed to cuss. So I'm going to try real hard not to do that, but I can't make any promises. Jane used to be my sponsor, a very good one too. So anyway, my ex-husband and was married at the time, so we have children 9 months apart, literally almost to the day. And then we had a son, and then I divorced him. And then I got with this other guy that was 20 years older than me, and guess what? He was married, right? And so, again, I was the trophy, You know, I thought I was the bomb. I was like, man, you know, I must be some really cool stuff for these men to be leaving their wives for me, you know? And so delusional. And I never thought about the fact that they could leave me for someone else too, right? Which is usually what happens. And so, you know, me and that guy lasted about 3 years. But see, I'm also a manipulator, right? This guy was 20 years older than me. His youngest kid was 14 years old. My children were like 3 and 4, and maybe even 2 and 3. And he didn't want a ready-made family, right? He just separated from his wife, so he didn't want a ready-made family. But see, I knew better than he did, right? So, you know, I'd stay the night at his house and never take my clothes home. And then the next time I'd stay the night at his house, I'd bring more clothes, right? And then all of a sudden the kids started staying, right? And toys and their clothes started coming over and they never went home. And before you know it, he's got a ready-made family. See, he didn't know what he wanted. I did, right? And so, yeah, I was a master manipulator, bless her heart. And that lasted about 3 years. He's like, I'm done. And usually, actually, it was really that I was done because there wasn't enough excitement for me in those commitments, right? I like that fast life. You know, I like the hustle and the bustle. And so when I was with my first husband, I started doing meth. So here was the deal. It was my brother-in-law's birthday, and he had been drinking since like 6 o'clock in the morning. It was about 6 o'clock at night, and he was passed out on this mattress. And there was like weed in the garage and the keg in the kitchen, and everybody kept running to the bedroom. And you know me, I'm like, I got to see what's going on. So I go in there, and I walk in, and this guy named Harley had this needle in my brother-in-law's arm, and I watched him insert that needle, and he just rose from the dead, just like came from the dead, just wide awake. And I was like, that's for me, right? And so that's when I started doing meth, you know. I'm going to tell you that when I was doing meth, I never put a needle in my arm, right? Like one of our readings in Cocaine Anonymous, you know. And I didn't. I was scared to put a needle in my arm, even though I seen what happened, you know, but I was too scared. So I did meth for quite some time, you know, and nothing ever got my butt. Well, I say that. I was going to say nothing ever got my butt like crack cocaine, but one time I was going to see somebody and I nodded off at the wheel because I've been up several days on meth, so I guess it kind of got my butt. Normal people don't do that, so I was, once again, delusional. And I'm very delusional. You know, even to this day, I have to work on that. You know, I get stuff in my head, and I see it in my head the way it's supposed to go. And if it didn't go that way, well, boy, oh boy, I'm not a very happy camper. And so then this guy came into my life, and I met him at this bar called J.D. West in Pflugerville. And he was in this place called Stratford House. It used to be on MLK. And it was a long-term, you know, it's a condition of the probation, sober house, like a, you know, transitional center. It was like a year long, but they went to work during the day, and then they had classes that, you know, and then they got halfway house. Thank you very much. I knew it. It wasn't coming to me. That's what crack does for you. And so he would get weekend passes and stuff, but I met him at this bar, and he was in a treatment center and a halfway house. But he didn't drink, and so, you know, love of my life. His name was Frank Lusk. Love of my life. And he eventually, you know, we got together and he'd come home on weekends. He took my kids in because my first husband was not a good father. He had nothing to do with my kids. And he took my kids in and he raised them like his own. And I still have God bumps. As long as he was sober, he battled with crack cocaine. And, you know, after about, I don't know, 9 months or so of us living together, he was going to a detox center to share his experience, strength, and hope. And then he was going to go to a meeting himself. And then he called me at 12 o'clock at night and said, I relapsed. Well, I didn't even know what that meant, you know. And, I mean, I'd gone to, like, alumni. I mean, not alumni. Al-Anon. I'd gone to Al-Anon. And it just really wasn't for me, probably because I'm the addict, right? And so they talk about their addict. But I didn't realize I was the addict then, right? I mean, me and Frank were together, and he was sober, and I was still smoking weed and drinking beer and stuff like that. And if I could find a way to do a little bit of cocaine, I'd do that too. But, he told me one day it bothered him. So, I'm not chameleon that I can be whatever you want me to be. You know, if I'm hanging around with the rockers, I'm going to be a rocker. If I'm hanging around with the cowboys, I'm going to be a cowgirl. I just, whatever, I can turn into whatever, right? And I always thought that was one of my good mini talents, I'm just saying. So, so Frank relapsed, right? And for about 4 weeks, he was going every Friday night buying crack. And I didn't know. I was raised in very small towns. I didn't even know about meth. I didn't know about, when I was young. I definitely didn't know about crack, right? And he brought it home one night and set it on the dresser just like that. It was about that high. And he laid 3 rocks down and he said, "You want to try it?" Well, even though he said, "Do you want to try it?" and he'd been gone every Friday for 4 weeks and spending all the money, I don't know why I didn't click to that. Might be a little bit, maybe something I shouldn't do, but I was like, "Yeah, let's try it," And I was one of the unfortunate people. I was sprung from the very first time I hit it. I mean, I was sprung. If it told me to do cartwheels down 35, I would have done it, And there's a long history of crack. I smoked crack for 16 years. I've been in and out of prison 3 times. I've been in ICE recovery 3 times. I've been in state hospital trying to get off crack cocaine. My sister-in-law told me, "Act like you're crazy, so they'll help you." I went to PES, and they said, "We can't help you. You're an addict." And I'm like, "Well, people that are addicts, obviously they're a little mental, right? I mean, something's wrong with us if I become an addict." And they wouldn't help me. So I had this bright idea on Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, standing at this overpass on 35, and this one cop over here was saying, "It's going to be okay." You know how they talk to you and calm you down. And this one down here is going, "Don't worry. It's good." I'm acting like I'm going to jump, but I love me too much. That's not going to happen. I just needed some help to get off crack cocaine. And so then there's this guy over here that I didn't see, this cop over here. And boy, when he hit me, he knocked me down, busted my eye open. They took me to ASH, but I got into ASH. Unfortunately, that didn't help me, right? So, I tried everything that I could do, and so many broken promises. I've been smoking crack for about 6 months, and Mom and Dad said, "Why don't you let us take care of the kids for a little bit till you get your shit together?" And I was like, "Okay," because that just gave me more time to smoke crack. Yeah, and it was a perfect excuse. I was like, "Yeah." So we just didn't know it was going to take me 16 years to get my crap together. But that's what happens. I'm very fortunate and grateful that I have my parents, because my children should have been taken away from me from CPS. They really should have. I was a bad mother. My kids, they got a Happy Meal at nighttime. They got something for breakfast. They got something for lunch. But depending on what time my second husband came in, Frank, from work, and stole some copper from the job and took it to the recycling place and got some crack and then happened to stop and get them something to eat, they lived on cucumbers. So my daughter to this day will not eat cucumbers. And there's something that I used to omit this in my story, but I read something somewhere that, if you omit something, it's the same thing as lying, right? And it's hard for me to get up here and tell y'all this, but it's my truth. Crack cocaine had me so sprung that I put my kids in unsafe situations, I took my son to the crack houses with me, and the kids were upstairs playing and the parents were downstairs smoking crack. I've taken my kids to score crack with me. My daughter, the day after her 9th birthday, me and my husband, we had to have that crack, right? So we left my kids, my son and daughter. Sabrina was 9. We left them with my cousin, Eric. who was brutally molested by his biological father, right? And I had been warned that little boys that are molested tend to sometimes molest. You know, I had been given that warning. But once again, that delusion got me and said that wouldn't happen to my kids. So I left my kids with my cousin, and he ended up molesting my daughter. You know, that's something hard to get up here and say in front of a bunch of people, because I want y'all to like me and shake my hand when I walk out the door, right? But, you know, whether you do or you don't, that's none of my business. My business is to tell my truth, what happened, what it's like now, you know? And that's been a hard lesson to learn, because I'm a very, very sensitive person. I've been sober 10 years. I've been crying almost every day. I love sobriety. I love it. It's a good day to be sober, huh, Miss Jane Bowes? So anyway, a lot of years of crack cocaine. You know, I could go on. I could spend the rest of y'all's night here talking about my drug addiction. You know, but it got to a point where I remember sitting on this bed, and there was like a dresser with the mirror on it, you know, the big dresser with the mirror. And I was sitting on the side of the bed, and I could just see my profile in the mirror. And I kind of jumped, because I didn't know who that girl was anymore, you know? I couldn't even recognize myself. I'd lost so much weight. And just my facial expressions were different. And it was, I was broken. I was so broken from crack. It really beat my butt down, you know? And I really thought in my life that I was going to die a crackhead. Now, I'm not talking about taking a hit and dying. I'm just talking about being a crackhead. Right after I got sober, this girl was found on Runberg in a dumpster in a suitcase, you know? Bad trick gone bad. And I've done all that. I said I've been to prison 3 times. First time I went, was for drugs. Second time I went was for drugs. And then the third time I went, it was because of drugs, but I used to tell y'all like this. I went for enhanced prostitution, which is enhanced prostitution, right? Because who in the hell goes to prison for enhanced prostitution? Oh, thank you! High five! I am not unique. So that's good to know. Huh? Yeah. Enhanced prostitution. That means I had more than 3. It's a felony. I said, what? Because Del Valley knew me like my first name. Tammy, you're back. Hey, how you been? One time I didn't even miss commissary. I was in there not so quick. Right? I had one lady ask me after a meeting one time when I shared my experience, strength, and hope, and she said, what's commissary? I said, oh, bless your heart. I don't understand. I don't understand people who do dope like me that's never been to jail. I mean, my fiance's like that, right? I said, John, you got to go to this treatment center with me. You'd fit in. I mean, he talked about how he smoked crack and shot meth and did this and did that. And he's from the ghetto. And I'm like, you'll fit perfectly. These are people that are jeopardizing their parole because they can't stay clean. He's like, I'll go, but I've never been in jail. And I'm like, what? I don't get it. It was a revolving door. But guess what? I haven't been to jail since I got sober, so that's good, right? Yeah. So that's what happened. As I looked in the mirror, and I seen, you know, that I didn't even recognize myself. And so this girl I used to smoke dope with, she came to my house one night, and I answered the door, and she's kind of swaying. So I knew she had been to the bar. And I was that person that usually scored for, right? And I told her, I said, Pat, I'm not smoking crack. I don't have a stem. I'm not going to make one out of aluminum. And I'm definitely not going to make one out of a can. So she just walked right on in, right? Sat down on my couch. Is your son here? Which he was grown. But I've had my grown son score crack for me before. So I said, yeah, he's here, Pat, but that never made a difference. I'm not smoking crack tonight. She waited for a few more minutes because, you know, She knew I was a 100% balls to the wall crackhead. And then finally she just got up and walked out the door. She told me she said, before she left, or before she actually came in, she said, I have it right here in my mouth. And still I didn't say, well, wait, hang on 1 minute, you know? I mean, because that's me. I'll say, well, screw it. I'll do it again, you know, start over again tomorrow, whatever. Right? I was 10 days sober, 10 days sober. And so she sat down, asked me all kinds of questions, hoping I'd change my mind. Finally, she realized I wasn't, so she just got up and left. You know, she never said thank you, have a nice night, F you, nothing, you know? And so as soon as that door shut, I dropped to my knees. And I'm not a knee prayer. I'm just saying, maybe I'm a little heathen, I don't know, but I'm not a knee prayer. I got a God. Obviously, I'm sober 10 years, right? But I dropped to my knees and I started crying because I knew that night I never had to smoke crack cocaine again. I knew it. I still get God bucks. Yeah. Right? Once again, that's God. So, you know, all kinds of good and bad things have happened to me since I got sober. You know, I don't want y'all to be delusional and think you're going to go out there and you're going to be on that pink cloud every day. You know, you may for 30 days, or you might have trouble as soon as you walk out, but that's okay. You know, with support from men and women in this fellowship, whatever fellowship you're in, depending on God, having faith in God that he's going to carry you through, you know, you can get through anything. So I was 6 months sober. So I'm diabetic. So I went a lot, you know, you smoke crack, you don't eat, you drink beer, you don't eat, you know, whatever. I didn't eat. But alcohol brings your sugar level up. So I'd come into Austin Recovery and my sugar level would be really high. And there used to be a nurse here who said, Tammy, you're going to die one of these days, right? And so I did damage to my kidneys. Well, 6 months sober, I did end up just putting a needle in my arm. It was for some cocaine, and I got Hep C from it. And so 6 months sober, I went to the doctor, and they were going to see if I could get off of these blood thinners that I was on. And they did a bunch of lab work, and they found out that my Hep C was active. See, I knew I had it, but it was non-active, right? And so it was active now, which means it's doing damage to my liver. And my first thought is, I got sober for this, right? So what I did is, and this is what we need to remember, and I still need to remember this today, is I called another girl who I knew had gone through the same thing I was going through so she could help me get through it, right? And she said, God has a plan. Who wants to hear that? I'm just fixing to find out that I've got to take interferon, which makes you deathly ill. It's nothing like they have out today. And that stuff is brutal. But God had a plan, right? I live to tell you that. I didn't believe it at the time, but that's okay. You know, if my friends help me believe times that I can't believe something, right? It's what it takes. And maybe 5 years sober. Let me see. 5 years sober. I went into kidney failure, right? And you remember that little girl I was telling you about that because of me, she got molested by my cousin and mom and dad ended up raising that little girl? She jumped through hoops to be a kidney donor for her mama. Our babies love us unconditionally. Our parents love us unconditionally. Also when I was about 6 months sober, I got to work for Austin Recovery when it was up Cross Park, you know? And I got to work with Jane, and I thought I was unique. Right? I'm always thinking I'm unique and always get proven wrong, but, you know, usually if you go to Austin Recovery, you know, I don't know what it's like now, but then you have to be 2 years sober before you can come to work for them. But see, it had been a few years since I'd been in Austin Recovery. I just happened to not stay sober because my ass wasn't ready yet. Just say it. So I was 6 months sober when I got to get a badge, Ulster Recovery badge. And boy, was I proud. You know, and it started out with volunteering at Ulster Recovery. I was volunteering. And my first day I went to volunteer, I pulled up in the parking lot. And I was like, are you out of your mind? You're going to go in there and work for free and not even get any money for it? What is wrong with you, Tammy? And then I went in there and I got to call clients that had graduated from Ulster Recovery like 30, 60, 90 days later and see, hey, how you doing? How you doing today? You know, and it was cool stuff, you know. And I got back out to the car after my shift was over and I continued to do that for months until I got hired on at Ulster Recovery, you know, because I was so dedicated to the place that saved my life. You know, and even though I didn't stay sober at that time, it's okay. See, there's a little saying that something about we're not surprised when addicts go out, right, because we're addicts. We're surprised when addicts stay sober, you know? So I told someone earlier that I have so much respect for people that have had a minor. I don't know if there's a minor or a major relapse, but a relapse, okay. I heard that once you go back out, you know, after having some recovery in your head, it is hell. That's what I heard. I've never had enough recovery in me to when I've gone back out, so I can't really say anything on that. But, you know, I have more respect for people that have gone out and come back in, you know, and it's just like, it makes me cry. They go up there getting a desire chip. You know, we have a friend that just relapsed after 3.5 years. And he got up and got him a desire chip. And I was bawling, you know. I was just like so proud of him because I don't know if I could do that, y'all, and that's my truth, right? So Sabrina gave me a kidney. That was August 29th, 2013. You know, we went to this orientation thing for them to, you know, learn about it and everything. And I was there with them, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to let my kid go into surgery. And both my kids were there, and I think my son was like, shoo, Sabrina's a match. You know, he was willing to do it, but I think he was real happy that his sister was a match. And that baby jumped through hoops, you know, and in August we'll celebrate 6 years. And my kidney is doing great. You know, I learned real quick to get into H&I. H&I is important. You can't keep what you have if you don't give it back. It was free. You got it free. Your parents, I don't know about any of y'all. I don't know nothing about any of y'all. I don't even recognize anybody hardly in here. But your parents might have paid for you, but what you got was free, right? And H&I is so important. I was 4 months sober. My sponsor at the time said, go to H&I meeting. I was like, okay. I don't know what it means, but okay. And, it saved my life. My boyfriend got me a shirt from California that says service junkie. You know, it's got the army tag thing around the neck and it says service junkie because for so many years, that's what I was, you know. And obviously still I'm a little bit today because I'm here to be with y'all tonight on a Sunday. And I couldn't think of a better place to be. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I may be dreading to come. I may come kicking and screaming, right? But I know God's got a plan, and I believe that, you know. And if my goal is if I can just touch one heart and somebody can get just one thing out of what I had to say tonight, then that's what it's all about, right? And the good thing is y'all get to turn around and do the same thing, you know. And the thing about H&I, there's some places you can have 30 days sober or just be sober and go, you know, because to someone, 24 hours is a long time. You know, I just have a few 24 hours. That's the only difference between me and anybody else in this room. You know, I'm still human. I still make human mistakes. I get crazy with my boyfriend sometimes. I have to go and apologize. And I don't like having to do that, you know. I've had to make amends, and I don't like having to do that either. It's horrible. You're like, why are you doing this still when you're sober? But, you know, we're human. You know, and I never thought in my whole life, now I'm going to cry. what a beautiful journey this has been, right? Like I said earlier, it hasn't all been good. I've done some things kicking and screaming. I'm not that big social butterfly. I don't meet a stranger, but once I'm home, this girl is home. You know, I'm real bad about getting out after I get home, you know? So I have to do all my stuff before I get home. Just say, meeting sponsees and all that. I'm not saying I won't, because I never say never. But, you know, I have sponsees. I have a sponsor. I've been in CA most of my sobriety. I started out in AA. But, you know, I told you that I haven't had a drink in 8 years, but I don't consider myself alcoholic. I just don't. And that's, you know, you get to identify with that. You know, no one can tell you whether you're alcoholic or addict, right? I just don't consider myself alcoholic. Now, I drank. I sure did. I drank a bottle of NyQuil last night. I smoked crack. My mama got me a frying pan I wanted for Christmas. I took it back to Walmart and went and got me some dope, and I found a bottle of NyQuil on the, you know, unbroken, but it didn't matter to me back then. The seal was broken, I still would have drank it. It's all that was left after that money was gone and the dope was gone, and I had to have something to put me to sleep, you know? And my daughter comes with me sometimes to treatment centers, right? And she went to one of my meetings I go to, and had all the women bawling, you know. It was cool, you know, because they felt it, right? We should go to treatment centers and tell the parents, say, the family does recover. It may not be today or next year. It may take 5 years, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, right? But they do recover. When I was in prison one time, my daughter wrote me a letter. She was 18 years old, and she gave me a what for. And told me just how bad of a mother I was. Rightly so. I was a bad mother. Her grandparents were raising her, right? But today she tells them that she's my very best friend. And she thanks the 12 steps for giving her mama back, right? Because that's no matter how old they are, that's all they want. So, you know, if you have kids out there, and I know some of you do, because Family House in here? Is Family House in here? Yeah? So, you know, you might have made some mistakes on the way, you know, or maybe someone else is raising your kids. And I've even got a sponsee that her kids got adopted out. So it's kind of hard to make amends, but you make living amends for that, you know. And then hopefully someday when they're older, they'll want to know who their real mom is, and they can do that, right? There's never not a way out. As long as you have a fellowship, you have some good supportive people, and you have God. Primarily God. There's never any reason. You know, I used to not have to have any reason to smoke crack. I mean, my shoelace be untied. I'm going to smoke me some crack. But now, today, you know, it's like, what for? You know, and I'm not going to say that it hasn't crossed my mind. I'm an addict. I was 5 years sober and my sister was smoking crack and I was pissed off. Why is she getting to smoke crack? And I can't smoke crack like a normal person. Well, hell, she wasn't smoking crack. I hadn't figured out normal people don't smoke crack. But she wasn't smoking it normal either, right? So, but I was just mad, and I called this fellow recovering crack addict, and I said, I am so mad right now. And she said, what's wrong? And I told her, and she's like, well, you're an addict. So it's okay to, you know, that it may cross my mind. But what do I do with that? You know, do I go to a meeting? Do I call another person in recovery? Do I get into my big book? Do I call someone and ask them, hey, how's your day going, right? Because when I'm in my head and I'm just woe is me and poor little Tammy and oh my God, I need to get out of my head and call another addict and see how their day's going, right? That's what I need to do. I need to think of others. On page 48, I believe, it talks about our very lives depend on helping another addict. Alcoholic, sorry. Yeah, our very lives. And it talks about on page 25 that I've got I have two, I'm a little country, so I feel like, I ain't got, you know, but I've got two choices. I can go on to the bitter end, and if we stop and just ask ourselves just a half a second, was the drugs really fun? Or the alcohol really fun? It got to the point where, you know, it was no longer a luxury. It became a necessity for me, you know? And I've got two choices. Go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help, right? A lot of times when people hear about my health problems and stuff, hang on, I'm going to get me a drink, okay? I'm like spitting out cotton balls up here. shoot, now I forgot what I was going to say. I should see. Sometimes at our age, you know, just a half a second to get a drink, we're like, whoop, where'd it go? oh yeah. So some people are like, golly, tell me all your health problems. How do you get through it? And I'm like, okay, well, I failed my kidneys by not taking my insulin, right? I lived on the street for 10 years. There is no reason whatsoever for me to complain on something that I induced. God didn't do this to me. You know, other dopers didn't do this to me. I did this to myself. And then something else they used to say is, y'all do realize that December 30th is the day before New Year's Eve, right? And people are like, you got sober the day before New Year's Eve? But see, I didn't have it in me for another hit. Right? That's how miserable I was. I was so broken that I didn't have it in me. And it wasn't a party for me anymore. I mean, Christmas wasn't any different than Friday night at 9 o'clock when all the people get paid. Right? My kids went years without hearing from their mama. You know, we joke around and I was missing in action. But now I'm back. You know, I've had Thanksgiving in my house every year for 10 years. What? And I cooked. I know. And so, I know. It's cool. I love cooking. Yeah. I'm not all hauled out and stuff cooking. I've gotten fatter. But that comes with recovery. Sorry. But I'd rather be fat than a miserable little crackhead. Right? And, you know, I've seen some of my sponsees, one in particular that introduced me. You know, she was talking about the NA24. Was she a mess? And the best thing about sponsoring, now I'm going to cry, is that you see these people, that they're just dead in their eyes, right? They're just dead. They're hopeless. They don't know what's, you know, they don't even know what, 12 steps, blah, 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 you know. And, I mean, of course, Elizabeth had been in Austin Recovery, so she knew, you know, some of this. But to see this angel just flourish with growth, it's amazing to watch. I can't wait to, y'all, one day y'all going to be sponsoring somebody and that light bulb's going to come on in their eyes, you know. And they're like a little flower that's bloomed, right? And y'all gonna say, that girl Tammy told me this was gonna happen, right? Y'all gonna say that one of these days when y'all sponsor it. Yeah. And, it's a beautiful journey. Don't give up. Well, some people say don't give up to the fat lady sings, but I'm not gonna sing for ya. So, I've really enjoyed it here tonight. I've laughed with y'all. I've got tears in my eyes with y'all. You know, I've seen some heads shaking. And, you know, I've always been the comedian of the family, so if I can make people laugh. But, you know, send a powerful message, too. You know, and that's what it's all about. I remember a girl coming into Austin Recovery when I was in treatment, and what she said really did have an impact on me. It's just, I was not willing to do the work. See, half measures avail us nothing. If I'm going to half-ass step this work, I'm going to get a half-ass recovery. And let me tell you, you don't want a half-assed recovery because you're going to be back in Austin recovery, and I'm not talking about alumni. You know, if you make it. Do you know there's something like every 8 seconds an addict dies? Can you believe that? I just can't believe that. It's so sad. And I don't know why that never crossed my mind when I was using, but I've lost a lot of people since I've been sober, and it's more devastating each time. You know, it's sad. It doesn't have to happen, you know? So if no one told you they loved you today, I love you. I really do, because we have something in common today. I don't know your name. I know these guys over here, I said, can I follow y'all up to the troll hall? Is that how y'all say it? Troll hall? Yeah, troll? Look like troll. I'm like, troll? They say, sure. Because none of this was here when I was here, so it's really grown, which is a blessing, right? It gets to help more addicts in a better way. And hopefully you aren't meeting each other out there in that field. Don't go to that field. Stay away from the field, okay? Because they used to tell us we'll take you to HEB and give you 50 cents for the phone, but they don't even have paying phones at HEB anymore. So if you don't have a cell phone, you're screwed. I don't know what you're going to do. It's a long ways to town. But thank you for letting me share my story with y'all tonight.